You all right, Dave?
I'm very well. How are you, mate?
Well, I'm hot. I think I'm as hot as Alan's apple turnover when Lynn put it in the microwave for 8 minutes.
Indeed. Hotter than the sun.
Okay, so tonight, following on from our Movie Bastards, we're going to do...
Yes, Movie Bastards.
It's sister podcast, TV Bastards. I think we're going to have... some of the same, if
maybe
the last pod is anything to go by.
Possibly.
So should we have like one in reserve, because we pick five, don't we?
I was thinking if we want, we can throw in a few honourable mentions, as you would put it.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty good, because there's quite a few that I think are really good TV bastards, but I don't really want to put them in my list, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So you want to kick off, Dave, or shall I?
I think you let me kick off last time, didn't you? So I'm going to let you kick off tonight, my friend. Go for it.
Now, these aren't in any particular order. They're just five bastards that I really like. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to say the name Howard Booth.
Howard Booth. Howard Booth. Oh, you've got me there. You've thrown me a little bit.
You don't know who Howard Booth is?
I should know this, shouldn't I? I probably do, but you've just thrown me a bit of a curveball to start off.
He's only the fucking bounder.
The bounder! Oh, do you know something? I thought about the bounder before. I thought Peter Bowles and the bounder. And I thought, good choice. Very good, because he's not on my list. Not on my list.
That is a little joke, Dave. I've not really picked the bounder.
Okay.
Okay, sorry about that.
Was that his name, Howard Booth?
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah.
I remember coming round to yours and you had that on DVD. I don't think I've ever really watched it myself, but...
I couldn't remember that his name was Howard Booth.
Idea of it.
It was quite good fun, wasn't it? I think I bought it from a charity shop, didn't I, in Cheetah Mill.
Right, so I'm going to stay, and this is my serious one, our Terry.
Oh, that's a really good choice. That's
Terry Duckworth.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, scum. The actor who played him is a really dirty, like, he's got a scum face as well.
Nigel Pavaro.
Nigel Pavaro, that's his name. And he was a bit of a twat in real life, wasn't he? Twat. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought you might have a bit of dirt on him, because he's, I think he is from Manchester, isn't he?
I seem to remember him being in the News of the World and the Sun and what have you a lot. Of a dirty screwing around, getting into fights, you know.
Well, can't blame him for that. Sort of admire him a bit now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I remember my dad was always very scornful of his acting. Absolutely awful. He pops back still, doesn't he, occasionally? But I think the last big storyline he had, which was his son, I think it was his son, one of his illegitimate sons, because I think he tubbed two birds and then fucked off in college. Right. He did all sorts of unsavoury things, like he tried to sell his son because Jack and Vera wanted to look after little Tommy Duckworth, and he sold him to the in-laws for about $2,000, because I think that the mother had died. Following on from that, one of the storylines was Tommy needed a kidney transplant. And of course,
sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but yeah.
Terry comes back and agrees to give him one. Now, I wouldn't have been surprised if
it was some sort of nonsense. Sorry.
Say that again.
I said a transplant. Give him one. He said, sorry, it was a really, really terrible joke.
Yeah,
so he's not a nonce as well as anything else.
So he decides to give up one of his kidneys, which was very admirable.
Very admirable.
But of course, he bottled it, or he wasn't getting paid for it.
Right.
So he fucked off again, leaving his son on death's door.
Again, you shouldn't laugh, but, you know. Typical Corrie storyline.
Yeah, Vera stepped in and donated one of her kidneys.
As she would. The saint, Saint Vera.
As she was, and she was very ill afterwards, and Vera nearly died. And I think that was when Jack finally washed his hands of Terry.
Yeah. Jack gave him a right dressing down, didn't he? Yeah. I remember that.
You see, Jack's always known he's a wrong gun, and he's wanted Terry out of their lives for a long time.
Yeah.
But it was just Vera, you know, being her only son.
I know, mums and their sons. This is the thing.
Yeah, every time he came back into the street, he seems to have put on a bit of weight.
Yeah, a bit of lard, wasn't he?
I think him and Tony Hadley became indistinguishable from each other. I think it would be a great idea if Tony Hadley played Terry Duckworth.
Oh, my God. Or maybe Pavaro and Hadley did an album together. Hadley and Pavaro.
Paul and Beau.
Yeah, exactly. And they could do like an album of covers, you know.
Yeah.
Great songs from the 80s, not just Spandau Ballet songs. Pavaro and Hadley, this Christmas, present some of their favourite Christmas songs.
Oh, God.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
All right, Dad.
All right.
You got 200 quid, Dad. Fuck off.
Pavaro and Hadley do a rendition of What Are You Gonna Get for Her Indoors? The classic Arthur Daly Terry McCann single. What are you gonna get, Tony, for her indoors?
Don't ask me, my son, because this one's yours.
Hadley and Pavaro.
Talking of George Cole, who for years we debated whether he was alive or dead.
Well, we didn't. There was one friend of ours that was insistent he had died. But this was like 25 years ago. He was insistent that he was dead. Yeah. And no, he's not. He's very much alive.
He was, but apparently he was in The Bounder.
Yes, he was. He was the almost like an opposite of, not an opposite of Arthur Daly, but certainly a rather straight-laced, I think was he the rather straight-laced brother?
Yeah, he
of
was the brother.
Woman that The Bounder was trying to court or, you know, fleece, probably is more to the point.
Yeah. Right, well, just to end on Duckworth, an interesting fact about Nigel Pavaro.
Nigel Pavaro.
He is now a journalist.
Is he really?
Yeah, and he's had, I think he's written articles for a lot of the broadsheets.
Broadsheets?
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't just done that. He probably did, like, the South Manchester Reporter.
Wow. Yeah. But I thought, you know, maybe, and now our showbiz reporter, Nigel Pavaro, formerly Terry Duckworth from Coronation Street, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, he's worked for Manchester Evening News, Tameside Reporter, and he's now freelance, and he's regularly been published in the Daily Star, Daily Mirror and Sunday Mirror and the Catholic Herald newspapers.
Wow, so, quite a lot of tabloids going
not
on there.
Not what I was thinking, actually. I thought he did better stuff than that.
I have to say,
he's an investigative journalist now, apparently.
Cool, great.
But this is interesting. It says, recently, following time spent in the Donbass region of Ukraine,
good God.
He added Die Zeit Online and Jane's Defence Review to the list of titles in which he's published.
Wow, Jane's Defence Review, wow.
Is that a military thing?
It is a military thing. Maybe he's doing some reporting on the speculative idea of super sophisticated drones or UAPs. You never know. Yeah. You never know.
Yeah.
Especially with everything that's been happening.
Documentaries, apparently.
This sounds interesting. Well, credit to Mr. Pavaro. I will doff my cap to him. You know, to change your career like that, fair play. You know. So he's obviously turned his life around there.
He realised he was absolutely shit as Terry Duckworth, so he had to get some self-respect back. Right, Dave, who are you going to throw out there?
Well, I'm going to do my first one, and I'm going to throw out a really controversial one straight away, okay? Because some of my honourable mentions are probably better candidates in a way, but I want to say this just because of how this character made me feel as a kid. And I think that's very important when we do these lists. It's all about evocation of how we felt when we were kids. So my first one is Yozza Hughes. And in a way, looking back on it, Yozza Hughes isn't really a bastard. He's a mentally ill person, mentally ill, brilliantly acted and portrayed by Bernard Hill in Boys from the Black Stuff. And the thing with his character was that whenever he came on screen and you knew what the final outcome was going to be, you knew that he was going to show this real act of violence on somebody from out of nowhere because he was so mentally deranged from being unemployed. And when he started saying, give us a job, please, come on, you can give us a job. I don't know what you mean, I can't give you a job, please leave me alone. And then ultimately he would just, at the final minute, just nut somebody. And it just, honest to God, it used to make my blood run cold as a kid. I used to find it really threatening because it's the thought of meeting, everybody's met a nutter, someone that's kind of unstable. It's being around that person who makes you feel very uncomfortable. And because they are kind of unstable, you're not quite sure what they're going to do next.
Right? Yeah.
Yozza Hughes was the ultimate nutter on the bus.
He was. Yeah. So why did you choose him as a bastard? Because I suppose he did have that real threat.
It's the threat factor.
He wasn't particularly... he didn't always attack people that deserved it, did he? You know,
that's the point.
Yeah.
That's kind of the point.
I remember he even intimidated Graeme Souness, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, that was good. That would have been good if he'd have nutted Souness, in a way.
Yeah.
Would have well deserved that. But I think really what it was is, as I say, this choice is much more to do with the evocative nature of it, of how it made me feel as a kid. So as a kid, it used to make me quite angry because I used to think, well, I totally could understand his plight and I did have some empathy for his plight. I probably have much more empathy now because I understand how terrible that kind of lifestyle and that time in Britain was, you know. I think, in a way, it was credit to the incredible performance by Hill because I wanted to include it because of the way it made me feel as a kid. It had a very profound effect on me as a kid, and so much so that I got to a stage I couldn't watch it. I could not watch it as a show. It just disturbed me.
Yeah, it did me as well. I think
I found it really disturbing.
I remember his daughter who nutted the social worker as well. Yeah.
That I found really disturbing.
Oh,
as well.
God. But yeah, you're right, Dave. That series was so affecting.
Oh, it was incredibly effective.
It still is.
I mean, I would struggle to watch it now without feeling it being uncomfortable. And I appreciate, and as I said, my precursor to all this was he doesn't really fit the bill in a way, but I just had to mention, him because I just thought it had this kind of profound effect growing up. I understand in a way. No, I'm going to say it. Yozza was a brilliant small screen bastard. He was made that by his circumstances.
Yes.
By his mental illness. I think you can still say someone was an absolute bastard, but empathize with them and understand why they've become that person. It was really pointing out how the lack of work, the lack of dignity, the lack of self-respect, the lack of identity had driven people mad. That was a lot of what Voice of the Black Stuff was about, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a fantastic series.
Amazing series.
The most harrowing bit of the Yozza story was at the end where he tries to drown himself.
Oh, my God.
That's really horrible, that.
It's really horrible, yeah.
And it ends with a freeze frame of him coming back out of the water, you know. But did you know Roy Cropper, the actor David Nielsen, was one of the benefit fraud investigators in Voice from the Black Stuff?
Really, was he?
Yeah.
Wow, because I can't really remember seeing Roy in anything other than Coronation Street.
Yeah, that's true. He once said excuse me to me.
Did he?
When I went to see this play.
That's very nice of him. Yeah. How very charming. What a gentleman. I like Roy Cropper. I like quite a lot of characters that have been in Coronation Street, to be honest. And I've been on a sort of mini holiday with the chap who played Graham.
Who was
another killer. He was a killer. Was he the guy who was going to marry Fizz and then tried to kill her or something? You know, but
can't blame him for that.
Very nice chap. Very nice chap. And he told me that he'd lived on Swallow Street where I'd lived. Well, obviously, you lived around the corner from me.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, oh, what year did you leave? And I told him, I said, you know, I think I left in about 2006 or 2007. And he said, well, that had been about a year before the double murder.
Apparently, it was a double murder.
So he reckons it was like a double murder on Swallow Street.
Yeah.
Doesn't surprise. I mean, listen to the sound of your voice. Just says it all, doesn't it? You've no surprise in your voice at all. I mean, it's nothing.
No, that's straight. Very light Coronation Street, Swallow Street, actually, wasn't it? With a type of houses.
Yeah. I think it was slightly more rough-edged. It was probably like an X-rated Coronation Street, really.
Coronation Street late.
If you mixed up the Warriors and Assault on Precinct 13 with Coronation Street, you'd probably get Swallow Street.
Yeah.
What's your second choice, sir?
Okay. It's the only female in the list.
Oh, I've been a bit sexist. I don't sexist in a way because I don't think I've got a female in my list. Thinking about it, isn't that terrible?
There's not as many female bastards, really.
There aren't. If you're doing TV bastards, it's mainly men in it.
But this is a brilliant TV bastard, a really good character actually, in a very watchable but much maligned TV show. This is Joan Ferguson, aka the Freak from Prisoner Cell Block H.
I don't have a lot of knowledge about Prisoner Cell Block H, so you're going to have to fill me in on this information.
Yeah, well, Joan was like a prison warder.
Right.
And she was a real awful bitch, and I think she became probably one of the most long-running characters in the show, in fact, and she became massive, really. She there was nothing she wouldn't really do, though she was portrayed as this, like, butch lesbian who was very aggressive.
I sort of vaguely remember it now, yeah.
Like really physically imposing, you know, murder was not beyond the realms of what she would do to get what she want. But a really good character. There's not much else to say about her, really. I'm not that familiar with Prisoner. I mean, I did watch some episodes back in the day, but she really stood out. Though I have since discovered, Dave, that. And linking a bit to our Operation U-Tree.
Oh, yes.
Operation U-Tree podcast. She has since been done for sexually assaulting teenage girls.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. She's a Lesa Saville.
She was playing a lesbian, but yeah, she was a lesbian, but she was an abusive lesbian. Yeah, so Prisoner Cell Block H star found guilty of sexually assaulting a teenage girl in the 1980s. So, yeah, so 74-year-old actress is denied two charges.
Wow.
Yeah, what was her real name? Maggie Kirkpatrick.
Well, interesting enough, my colleague at work, she's left to become a prison guard at Berwyn Prison, which is like a massive prison, just 20, 30 miles away. And on her leaving card, I put a couple of really nice things, you know, because she was great. She's a great person. She looks after our dog, Jessie, when we go away and stuff. She's such a pal, is Sharon. Yeah. Really is a great pal. And she's been lovely to work with. But for some reason, I thought, oh, well, I'll be clever after all the niceties. And I put in brackets, bit like Prisoner Cell Block 5. Right? Don't ask me why. And I came back to look at it, and I was reading it out to another colleague. And as I was reading it, going, why the fuck have I put Prisoner Cell Block 5? I was able to somehow manufacture the 5 into an H.
Oh, well done.
Fucking brain cells, dying brain cells with all the booze, mate.
Were you getting it mixed up with Babylon 5?
I don't know who the fuck, yeah, maybe. Babylon, who the fuck knows? For some reason, I thought for a second it was called Prisoner Cell Block 5.
But it was a remarkable series, Prisoner, I think.
I mean, on for ages.
Flowers.
Yeah.
She used to bring roses.
You know what's crazy about something like that is I think that Granada picked it up for nothing so that you could just fill a gap at one in the morning.
It started on Sunday nights because I remember it, Sunday nights at about 11:30.
Yeah.
Thinking, what's this? But it's so crap, you know.
You just get drawn.
You start watching it because obviously things like Neighbours and Home and Away had started coming over here then. They did have some really good storylines, you know. I mean, the acting and the sets were a bit poor, and obviously you'd see all the same actors from all the other shows, you know, Alf was in it from Home and Away. He played a few characters.
Yeah.
Your Big Galah.
Your Big Galah.
Yeah. Mrs. Mangle. Madge. Harold Bishop. They only had like about 24 actors in Australia around that.
Yes. It's amazing, wasn't it? It was on late, wasn't it? It was always on late.
And
it was then 12 or
Channel 5 picked it up a few years later, I think during the 90s, and they were showing it at like 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
And what was good about that is the voiceover guy was always really sarcastic.
You know, it means shit.
You would record it just to hear what he said. You know, he'd always say something over the credits that was really disparaging and funny.
I'm like, can't wait for next week. So
It could be quite brutal, prisoner. You know, they'd be like, B would always get someone's hand in that big press. You know,
it was the really old bugger who had a, you know, right smoker's face.
Oh, God, chimpanzee.
Chimpanzee.
Lizzie Birdsworth.
God, she was ancient.
Oh, God.
Christ almighty.
It was one horrible episode.
You put your finger inside the cracks in her face.
Looked like someone had been chopping wood on it. It was one horrible episode.
A real smoker's face. A real smoker's face.
One episode, Dave, where they had like this workman coming into the prison, and obviously the girls were like, "Oh, come here, darling," you know, and all this. And Lizzie was just lying down on the lawn and she parted her legs.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ.
And so I'm like, do you want a bit of this?
Oh, Christ.
Fucking hell. How did that beat the edit? You know,
tainted for life.
Right. So maybe we'll do a pod on Prisoner. But
yeah,
you'll have to watch all 500 episodes, though. Go on, Dave. Who's your next one?
I'm very excited to mention this character because it's one that came sort of flooding back to me before the said gentleman who played this character died, and he died very recently. But I'm going to put as my next TV bastard or bitch, if it could be a lady, in the words of Alan Partridge. No, this is definitely a TV bastard, and that is Anthony Falconetti. Played by the brilliant William Smith,
yeah,
who died just the other day at the age of 88. God, I hated him so much as a kid.
Yeah,
I loved Rich Man, Poor Man as a kid.
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
loved it, and I loved the Jordache brothers and their journey. Both Nick Nolte and Peter Strauss. Thought Peter Strauss was a great actor who never really transferred it to film, but obviously Nick Nolte did and became a big star. But what a scene stealer William Smith was in anything he was in, and he was brilliant as Anthony Falconetti, and he was fucking horrible. He was a brilliant psychotic bastard, brilliant at that. He was so good at playing that.
Only thing I remember of that, because I don't think I watched it properly, but my mum was watching it, was he had a knife fight, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, and really enthralling that.
In the end, Falconetti kills Tom Jordache, doesn't he? And I'm going to give spoilers away here. But Rudy Jordache, who becomes really successful, you know, he tracks him down eventually and goes after him. And snivelling Falconetti, he's like, "Oh, don't shoot me, Rudy. I didn't mean to do it like this." But all along, he's like, knows he's got like a gun down the back of his leg, you know what I mean? Like a secret gun in the holster. And Rudy Jordache I'm just going to let the snivelling bastard, and he can't do it, he can't shoot him, he can't kill him. And then as he turns away, as he's reaching to get his gun, Falconetti, he presses like this, there's this hose on the ground, and that you can hear the pressure pipe go like this as he reaches. So Jordache turns around and he fucking shoots him, the fucker. Like this, you know, and he's like, "Yes, fucking get Falconetti, you've got Falconetti." But there's still a twist in the tale, because as Jordache turns and slowly walks away, Falconetti's still got just enough in him to grab the gun and shoot Jordache right in the back, like that. And then you see Rudy Jordache walk through into Las Vegas, out from this alley, slowly until he falls to his knees. And then that's the end of the second series.
So where did Falconetti fit into the story, really? I mean, I don't really know the premise. Or
I can't fucking remember. Plot. I think what it was is that Tom Jordache left home. I think what it was is like Tom Jordache was like regarded by the father as the rebel. The dad was a bit of a brute and horrible, and they had a fight with his Tom Jordache. He'd had enough of his dad. And Rudy Jordache, he was the one who went on to become like a successful businessman, and then he became like a senator. So when he ends up ultimately killing Falconetti, he was this hugely successful senator and very, very wealthy man. He was, you know, he was getting vengeance and revenge for his for Falconetti murdering his brother Tom in the knife fight.
Yeah.
So he went after him in the end. But it's all very vague. It's been years and years and years since I've seen it. I just, because of doing this, I watched those clips the other day.
Ah, right.
So I watched the clip where Falconetti first meets Tommy, and I think they're on a boat. I think they're on a boat or something like that. It looks like they're on like a merchant ship. And Falconetti, Tom Jordache walks away, Nick Nolte walks away from him, and he goes, "Hey, punk!" Like this, and he turns back around and he goes, "Don't ever turn your back on me when I'm talking to you." Like this, and then Tom Jordache just turns his back on him and walks away, and you just think, "Holy fuck, there's going to be some trouble now."
Mm-hmm.
And he just, he epitomizes like psychotic. He looks brilliantly dangerous.
He was a great character, and that's a great choice. That I didn't think of that one.
There's a film.
It's funny because we did mention him once on a podcast, but yeah, the William Smith. It's been nice to see the tributes. Amazing come in tribute. Because he isn't that well known, I suppose. Or
can I just tell you something that's in a film, not on TV, but it's really worth anybody out there, go on YouTube and look at the clip. William Smith mentions that because they often talk about the fight scenes he was in, because obviously he's in a big fight scene with Clint Eastwood in Every Which Way But Loose, I think. It goes on for ages. But he says that the most real, it was absolutely real, he said, the fight scene between him and Rod Taylor, you know, the great Australian actor Rod Taylor from The Birds and what have you. And he was a strong guy, you know. But there's this scene in this film called Darker Than Amber, right? And if you just YouTube Darker Than Amber, it'll come up for the fight scene, right, with him and William Smith. And it is fucking crazy. I mean, this is a film from like the 1960s. They really fucking go at each other. Big time.
Is it like when Hoskins fought Les Battersby?
It made me think of exactly that, Lee. Yeah.
What was that film called?
Hoskins strap. Yeah.
24/7 or something, was it called that?
But I tell you what, I think it's more brutal than that, because if you look how fucking physically strong William Smith is in that scene, Jesus Christ. And Rod Taylor's no slouch. Rod Taylor was a big, strong Aussie guy. And apparently, Taylor broke Smith's ribs, and Smith broke Rod Taylor's nose. It was a proper scrap. They really got into it. But Taylor liked him a lot and had him, and actually had him in his next film.
Right. So
because I think he respected his, you know, his realism, you know, his passion.
Mm-hmm.
He was a steam sealer. He was a fucking steam sealer in anything he was in. So when you think Rich Man, Poor Man, you always think of the main characters, but the standout person you think of when you think of Rich Man, Poor Man is probably Anthony Falconetti.
Definitely, yeah. Right, I'm gonna throw in this character who, really similarly to Yossi Hughes, left me cold, you know, and he was absolutely brilliantly played by someone who is now getting more film work and getting recognition for what a good actor he is.
Yeah.
The character is Todd Alquist.
Right.
Now, do you know what he's from?
I don't know. That sounds interesting.
You will know who it is when I say. He's played by an actor called Jesse Pymans.
Okay.
He played this character called Todd in Breaking Bad.
I know exactly who you mean. And I was looking at him. He is a brilliant psycho in Breaking Bad.
A different type of psycho altogether.
He's kind of nice.
He just seems like really docile.
Yeah.
Really friendly. But you first get an inkling of what an absolute sociopath he is when he, you know, when they're doing that, they're nicking the liquid from that train.
Sure, and he kills the boy.
And he kills the boy.
So cold-bloodedly.
Yeah.
So, it left me. Certain scenes in Breaking Bad really left me cold. And my honourable mention was going to be the character Gus Fring.
Yes, yeah. He does appear in a lot of lists, actually.
But I thought he's almost, in a way, too obvious. And another one, it was going to be two characters that were from, like, kind of streaming shows, things that you see on Netflix and whatever. And the other one was Negan from The Walking Dead.
I considered him.
And brilliant, though, both they are. I think you're absolutely right, because just before I came on air, I was looking at the characters in Breaking Bad and saw the gentleman in question, sort of only glanced at him and thought, oh, yes, his character as well. I didn't think to add him because I just thought Gus Fring was such a sort of long-standing, consistent character that ran through the series, if you like, especially, you know, the series, like, I think, end of series two to right through to the last series.
I do see him in lists of bastards, but I don't remember exactly what he did, which was bastardish, to be honest, but I'll have to...
It's the one scene with Gus Fring where he's right in front of Bryan Cranston.
Walter White.
And it was his boy. It was his main side guy, you know, guy who had been like really looking after his drugs den and everything else, his real sidekick. And as a show of strength that, you know, anybody who steps in his way, it doesn't matter how close he is with him, he will kill him. He'll destroy him. And he turns him around and he slits his throat. And it is just so... fucking
yeah, I remember that now.
That is so fucking cold. What he is an absolute calculating psychopathic bastard, without doubt. Makes your blood run cold. So he's a fantastic character, but I kind of sideline both of them. But I'm glad you've picked up that particular young man because he's a brilliant actor. I thought he was fabulous in The Irishman.
I've not seen that.
He was fabulous in the second series of Fargo. In The Irishman, he plays a bit of psycho. In Fargo, he doesn't. He plays quite a different character in some ways in Fargo. But he's playing like the sociopath character that he played in Breaking Bad. I thought he did it brilliantly, and it really left me cold.
It did, yeah.
What's his real name again? What's his
actual name? I think it's Jesse Pymans.
Jesse Pymans, I think that's right. Something along those lines, yeah.
When he killed the kid in Breaking Bad, you could sort of understand in a way why he did it. It was an impulsive act.
Yeah.
To stop them getting caught.
Yeah.
And, you know, it horrified the others, obviously. But what he did after that, which was just so bad, and it was really affecting, I couldn't stop thinking about it for ages, and it really upset me, was when, you know, Jesse gets to know this girl who has a son.
Yes.
And he drives Jesse, who's sort of captive, and he makes him watch as he just gets her to the door and just shoots her.
Yeah, it's fucking horrible. It's horrible. I think Breaking Bad had some scenes in it that were just... That is one also that really left me feeling quite uncomfortable. The other scene that I found really, really, really disturbing was the people in prison. They called on, like, hitmen in prison to take them out because they were going to get taken to court, weren't they? They were going to get framed. And the way they just, like... got them from behind and start stabbing that crazily into their heart area.
Yeah.
Really freaked me out. It was like so brutal and quick. I mean, quick, probably quite effective. You'd probably be dead quite quickly done like that.
That was a really good storyline that developed from Jesse and his family. You know, these nutcases who just kept not Jesse. Todd and his family.
Todd. Yeah.
And they kept Jesse captive to be this slave. And it was just the predicament that he was in there.
It was horrible, wasn't it? It was horrible.
You know, it was like, you thought, how is he ever going to escape? He might never escape this.
I sort of equated them as a family, almost like the family in Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, they were.
There was something about them because they were all just so cold-blooded and brutal.
Yeah, Nazis as well, I think.
Exactly. And Todd's character was, whose real name is Jesse.
He was just like really, he just seemed really... benign, didn't they, most of the time?
Because he'd been brought up with brutality. So
he wouldn't do anything or speak in a way that was overtly horrible. He would just say, oh, well, you've got to do this now. And he wasn't aggressive. He was never aggressive.
No, and it was almost like he was brought up like, don't use profanity. Don't use profane language in front of your mother, but go out and slaughter the pig.
Yeah.
So it was almost like his character, there was a kind of brutality that he just didn't understand. He could not understand that he was being brutal. So it was almost like this kind of serial killer mentality.
Yeah, you did wonder whether he actually realised what he was doing.
No, that's right. Well, it's almost like he was, you know, maybe kind of a a sociopathic, autistic kind of person. So it made him a very frightening character because he was so cold-blooded and benign at the same time.
Yeah.
Really weird. Brilliant choice, Lee. Brilliant.
Thank you. What are we up to now? Have you got three left or two left?
I have. I've got this messy page of different things. Can I mention a couple of also-rans that I don't want to do? So I'm going to throw in there because he was just fabulous at being a bit of a grumpy bastard. I just want to say John Thor for his career as in the Sweeney.
Yep.
And also for Morse, of course, where he could just be like an absolute annoying bastard.
He was a bastard to Lewis, wasn't he? Always
a bastard, absolute pompous bastard.
He was, yeah.
And in the Sweeney, he was an hard-faced bastard. You know,
he was the TV equivalent in a way of Popeye Doyle, wasn't it?
Very good.
You mentioned last time.
Yes, very good call. The other one, I've just got to mention him because he's just an insufferable bastard, right? Is Edward Woodward, of course, as Callan, and of course, McCall in The Equalizer, because he really is an insufferable twat.
You've got it in for Edward Woodward.
I love him.
Put him in last time for his portrayal of Howie.
I've never
watched any Callan. It just looked too grey and depressing.
My name is John McCall. Listen to me. I am a little squat, overweight, 59-year-old man who smokes 60 cigarettes a day. But I will take you apart. Don't get
the equalizer.
The equalizer. Don't hurt me, Mr. Equalizer. I will break all the fingers on both your hands if you do not tell me where she is. Mr. Equalizer, don't hurt me. It was so funny. And it was a Callum. He was a right bully in Callum as well, wasn't he? Bullying the little snivelling snitch guy. And it's slapping people
Callum
about.
What was his job in Callum?
I can't really remember.
Some sort of the military or...
Yeah, he was a sort of private eye, I think, you know, and a bit of ex-military, bit of a nasty shit, or, you know, would go to sort of quite extreme measures to get what he wanted, the information he wanted out of people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just wanted to give them a mention.
Yeah, there's plenty that deserve a mention, like grot bags, of course, from Rod Hullany, Muse Penguin.
Oh, wow, what a fantastic shot. Yeah, fantastic. But my next official mention is for a performance by a fabulous actor based on a real life character, which I hope is okay.
Yeah.
And I want to mention Brian Dennehy for his fabulous performance as John Wayne Gacy in the miniseries To Catch a Killer.
Yeah.
In fact, it was a two-parter, wasn't it? And he really is brilliant in that. It's a tour de force of acting, I think, really.
Yeah.
And he comes across as this bullish, belligerent, horrible sort of, well, serial killer, obviously, but kind of butch, in denial, homosexual, violent sadist. You know, it's just a very, very good performance. And it left me feeling very uncomfortable having watched it. And I've sort of tried to pick my choices from that, really, the impact.
It's a very good TV film, that, isn't it?
Yes. Was it a TV film or was it a two-parter? I can't really remember. I seem to remember it as
Could be a two-parter, but like a mini-series then, TV.
Probably was able to rent on video and watch as a three-hour film, wasn't it, as well?
Well, one of our listeners, Johnny, I think your friend Dave, hello, Johnny, made a very good choice.
Fabulous.
The movie Bastards, which was
brilliant list.
Dennehy's character in First Blood.
First Blood, yeah. Dennehy's brilliant.
He was a proper bastard, wasn't he?
He is a proper bastard in that.
Yeah. And he gets his comeuppance, thankfully.
He does. I think it's good to throw in a mention for Dennehy, because in a way, like William Smith as well, great sort of character actors who were, obviously Dennehy was a very highly regarded actor. Sadly, I don't think William Smith was quite as highly regarded as he should have been because he was a terrific actor. But Dennehy could play lots of different roles and lots of empathetic characters, but he did play the tough, kind of hard bastard character very well. But he played Gacy brilliantly, I thought, because Gacy's quite obviously quite a complex, strange figure with a lot of hang-ups, ultimately, you know, a psychopathic serial killer. So I thought he delivered it fantastically, and it's a quite a harrowing film, obviously, because of the subject matter.
I'm surprised we haven't both got the same one yet.
This is amazing, isn't it? They're still timely.
I think I've got 6 on my list.
How many have I?
Just an honourable mention, though, and I don't think I'll put him in. He is a bastard, though. He does fit the bill as an absolute bastard. Some are villains, some are killers, but this one is a proper bastard. So actually, I am going to put him on the list, and that is Francis Urquhart from House of Cards.
Oh, brilliant. What a great choice. Brilliantly played by Ian Richardson. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also plays a brilliant bastard in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, and I was actually thinking of him for that. I'd forgotten about House of Cards. That's really interesting. Yeah, he's great in that.
It's a brilliant portrayal of how the Tory party was in the 80s and 90s, you know, the Thatcher and the Major years. Great bastard, really sly, really sneaky, always double-crossing, But interestingly, his initials are FU, and I wonder whether that was.
And I'm really glad you've chosen the original character of Francis Urquhart rather than Frank Underwood.
Yeah.
Even though it's brilliantly played and it's a great performance, mm-hmm. but the original one, the original character by Richardson, I think it just, because he's so incredibly sneaky and slimy in the way that he manipulates everything in his favour. You know, and that's coming the back of knowing how being a creepy, slimy git and how easy that was for Kevin Spacey to play because of his real life, you know.
I don't know if Spacey's as bad as he's been painted, really, but you know, I'm not his behavior in certain situations.
You know? And I think it has to credit, you know, you've got to separate the art from the man as well. You know, you have to say that it is brilliant how he plays Frank Underwood. The American series is great, but you're always aware.
I never persevered with that, actually.
You're always consciously aware that, you know, if you've watched the British version of House of Cards, of how good that was. So it's like, what's the point? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Great choice. Right.
Thank you. So I'm going to have to drop one of my final ones, but that's okay. Go on, Dave. Who have you got?
So I'm going to go for, this is my fourth one now, isn't it?
Yes.
So I'm going to say as my fourth TV bastard. Now, again, I was toying with the idea of Basil Fawlty because... He's a bastard.
I like Basil. He's right in those situations.
But he's a right bastard sometimes.
He's a pompous, snobby git.
Exactly. He's a bastard. It's one's definition of a TV bastard.
To be fair, he would treat us with disdain if
he would treat us with absolute disdain, and we would want to thump him. A bit like that episode where Bernard Cribbins beats the crap out of him because he's had enough. But Bernard Cribbins' character is such a pompous arse.
Yeah,
as well.
He's a bastard as well.
He's a total bastard. So it's very interesting episode that. However, I'm not choosing that character. It's another honourable mention. The character I am going to mention, even though I absolutely adore this character, but let's be honest, he is a very creepy bastard, and that is Papa Lazarou from The League of Gentlemen.
Ah, good.
Which, again, because of the whole BLM, Black Lives Matter, and the insanely wokeness of the streaming channels, it was taken off air because of Papa Lazarou's character.
Was it actually? I mean, I heard rumours that... I don't know if it was connected to that, though. I think it might have been a bit of a, you know, people jumped to the conclusion about
that.
It
totally was.
I think it had something to do with the licence had ended, because it was on BBC iPlayer, I think.
Yeah, but I think it was removed for quite a while from as soon as the BLM thing happened, you know, during lockdown.
Yeah, you could be right. It probably was.
I think they took it off because they took a few things off. They took Fawlty Towers off as well because there is some genuinely racist comments in.
There is, but that's more a reflection of Basil, isn't it?
It's not. Absolutely.
It's the same with Alf Garnett, you know, he's showing the racists.
The argument now is, of course,
really.
is that people, perhaps some people just won't get that or understand that. But I think if anybody just didn't see that Papa Lazaru was the most surreal, bizarre, unusual character, how you could ever equate that with any form of racism, I personally don't
get. Yeah, he wasn't meant to be a black person anyway.
No, he was just supposed to be the most strangely avant-garde, bizarre sort of... If there is a hint of racism, which there is, I'll be honest, I'll look at it and think, you know what, there probably is a hint of racism. It's about probably about travelling people more than black people. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of talk that it was because of the blackface of Papa Lazaru, where the character, where it, League was taken off air for a bit because it was deemed sensitive. I think, in retrospect, it might well have been because of the sort of, like, Mickey taking out of travelling folk, you know. But what a character, so sinister and so brilliant. And again, going back to that evocation of how it made you feel the first time you saw it and how brilliant it was for the first time, that's why it's in my list. So Papa Lazaru is, without doubt.
Well, I was wondering whether
the whole... An absolute comic bastard.
Yeah, wasn't the whole Papa Lazaru circus coming to town, was that like a sort of tribute to... The Something Wicked This Way Comes novel.
Indeed it is, my friend. Yeah, yeah. So it's got that Ray Bradbury connotation there.
I couldn't stick with that book, Dave. I've tried reading it twice, but...
Really hard.
I think it's something you read as a teenager, isn't it? It's more fitting for that. But no, I couldn't really...
Well, I think the character and the ideas behind... The idea for us behind the Something Wicked podcast, which obviously the derivative of that comes from Ray Bradbury's book, which actually is stolen from Shakespeare. So it's not even from Bradbury, it's Shakespeare. It is that it's delightfully wicked, you know, a bit naughty and strange. We like the strange. We like things that are a bit bizarre and a bit weird and quirky. And they have it all in a nutshell in Papa Lazaru. But who also happens to be a true bastard, you know, abducting women. And
it's so dark, that storyline.
So dark.
And that's what's great about League of Gentlemen, is that they do have these really dark storylines amongst the comedy.
Absolutely.
You know, I suppose maybe the comedy comes second, doesn't it? Really? It does make you laugh, but I think their influences are all quite serious stuff.
I don't think any... program has ever been able to marry up the idea of horrific ideas and comedy as well as the League of Gentlemen did. They were brilliant at that. It really was a fabulous...
The Papa Lazaru scene in the Christmas special made your list of...
It did.
Top 10 scary moments, didn't it?
I think I'm right in saying that we actually included it in the end, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
It was in it was in our top 10 scary moments of all time.
Yeah. Right, Dave, so I had 6 on my list, but I know I've only got 1 left. Okay, so I'm going to...
Tell us what your other one was, though.
Well, my other one was Joffrey.
Oh, yes.
From, of course, Game of Thrones. How could you miss him out?
Indeed.
I mean, what a brilliant character.
Well, I haven't got him, but I was thinking of Joffrey from...
I mean, there's so many from Game of Thrones.
Exactly, that's what made me think that, too.
Yeah. He sort of blew your mind when you were watching... To see how awful he could be, you know, this little shit of a kid. I think that's what made it worse, you know, this sort of dickhead kid killing people.
If I was to pick a character from Game of Thrones, though, I might have actually chosen Littlefinger over Joffrey because he's such a slimy character.
Yeah, is that the one played by Aiden?
Aiden, yeah. He plays slimy bastards brilliantly.
Yeah. And of course, you could have had Ramsay Bolton.
Indeed.
He was a literal bastard, wasn't he, actually?
Yeah, he was a literal bastard. And there is a list of kind of very good bastard-esque characters in Game of Thrones, as there are in, again, Walking Dead and Breaking Bad and all these massive shows that they've been in the last few years. But anyway, what is your official...
Right, one thing I just want to say about Joffrey is what was so great is Joffrey's long and painful death.
Yes.
I think that was such a reward for the viewers, wasn't it? And just to see him choke and die so painfully, you know, I must have rewound it about 3 times. I loved it so much. It was like, yes, it was one of those punch of the air moments, wasn't it?
Can I
remember, I think there was someone like Samuel L. Jackson tweeted something about how good it made him feel. Like, yeah, that motherfucking Joffrey.
it was great.
That. Okay, so I'd be amazed if you've not got this on your list, Dave. The ultimate TV bastard.
Go on, I think I might.
And that is obviously J.R. Ewing.
Oh, well, do you know something? I have to say, I didn't even go there. I didn't even go to Dallas at J.R. because I knew
you're number one.
I knew I would, right?
Fair enough. Yeah.
I absolutely knew, because there's very few conversations that we have where that you don't at some point go, "You're a loser, Barnes."
Yeah.
"You're a loser, Barnes." So yeah, of course, J.R. Ewing is probably the he probably is the ultimate, you know, TV bastard. You know.
Yeah. One thing I found out that I found very, very interesting in the development of his character, he said that he based it a lot on the character he plays in Stardust. You know, the film with David Essex, the sequel to That'll Be the Day?
Yes.
With Jim McClane.
Yeah, because he plays his manager in it or something.
He plays his American manager,
He's American manager in Stardust, that's
right.
He was
a bit of a sly bastard there.
Yeah, so yeah.
He based a lot of it on it. But I just think he's perfectly cast. Hagman has got such a unique face.
Yeah,
and
he's brilliant.
An annoying face. And
yes.
His hair's annoying, you know, as well. And there was always rumours that it was a toupee, wasn't there? But he was such a bastard. He was so bad to everyone, really.
Well, he was perfect. He was the perfect quintessential TV bastard mm-hmm. because his character, he rejoiced in being mean to people.
Yeah.
And he rejoiced in being arrogant. And he rejoiced at taunting and getting one up on other people. This was his whole persona.
That's his whole reason for living, wasn't it?
And he didn't care if his brother thumped him or someone else thumped him, as mm-hmm. long as he won in the end. As long as he knew he would win in the long strategy, you know.
Mm-hmm. He was always having a go at Sue Ellen, calling her an unfit mother. You're a drunk and an unfit mother. And he got her locked up in an asylum, didn't he?
Yeah.
But then he'd always get back together with her for some reason.
Oh, JR. Sue Ellen, my little lady.
Yeah. Just buy yourself something really nice now, you know.
Put something sexy on. Sit in the garden by the pool.
But one great storyline is that he did divorce Sue Ellen, and Sue Ellen found another man who she married and moved to London with, that being her lover, Don Lockwood, played by none other
than
Ian
Lovejoy
McShane. Yeah.
Fantastic. McShane. He's been about McShane.
Yeah.
He's been about.
I was thinking of who's his nemesis in Lovejoy? That guy played by Malcolm Tierney, used to be Tommy McArdle in Brookside. Great actor. He was a bit of a bastard. Lovejoy was a bastard, really.
Lovejoy was a conniving
conning shit. Git.
Yeah. He was a conning, conniving shit. Lovejoy was a bastard, without doubt. But we liked him, so he's not one we want to put on our list.
We did, yeah.
I'm quite surprised that you hadn't mentioned the other Terry, who I believe his name was Terry, from Brookside.
You mean Barry Grant?
I'm thinking Barry Hart and not bloody Terry.
Yeah.
Oh shit! Was there a Terry in Brookside?
Yeah, Terry.
Oh, was he the one with the big tash? I didn't really watch it very often, to be honest.
Yeah, the actor actually got mixed up in the Liverpool underworld.
Did he really?
He was sent down.
He got sent down.
Yeah, Brian Regan is called.
So the real Barry.
Yeah, the real Terry.
Terry, the one with the tash.
Yeah. He got sent down. Yeah. I think he was quite a low level member of this organised crime gang. You know, it's a bit sad, really, you know, that he obviously struggling for work, I imagine. Everyone taking the piss out of him.
Yeah. He was like the archetypal stereotype for
Harry Enfield
and Paul Whitehouse to do the Scousers.
You know? No, Paul Whitehouse never did. He never did want the Scousers, you know.
It was
Joe McGann.
Oh, it was. It was one of the McGanns, wasn't it?
And it was.
Hi, dear.
I think it was Gary Bleasdale.
Gary Bleasdale.
Who, Alan Bleasdale's son, who was also in Boys from the Black Stuff.
Right, yeah.
He played, what was it, Barry, Teddy and...
Yeah.
Barry, Teddy and... Hey, who was the other one?
You do know, don't you know? You do know, don't you know?
What was the other one? Barry, Terry and... Was it Gary?
Gary, maybe, I don't know. I can't remember. I've not seen it in years.
Oh, it's fantastic. That.
And I can't remember the last time I watched Brookside. Brookside's not still going, is it?
No, it turned absolutely shite.
But Barry was quite a good bastard, wasn't he? I always got the feeling he was in real life. There was something about him. Something a bit nasty about him. Mm. Just got a kind of nasty way about him. I could tell.
Yeah.
He was not a nice guy. Probably doing him a terrible...
Calm down.
Doing him a terrible injustice. But Terry really was that stereotypical pimped tash scouser, look like the fella from Frankie Goes to Hollywood. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right, don't you know? Yeah. Fried chicken.
I love that sketch where it was like late at night in the scouser's house.
Yeah.
And you heard like some rustling in these rooms.
Yeah.
And then someone put the landing light on. And they're all stood there with like a video or a Nintendo. You know, they're all robbing each other.
Yeah. I love that Saturday morning football show where they're just doing the stereotypes of the Manx and the Scousers.
Yeah.
Oh, funny.
Right, we segued.
Excuse me.
Okay, Dave, I'm ready for your number one choice.
Well, can I just say that was a very interesting segue from the Harry Enfield Scousers, having initially talked about the remarkable Larry Hagman playing JR. Just very quickly before I do my final one, is how long do you think that Larry Hagman played JR for? It seemed to go on for fucking ever. You know, it was a long time.
It was. I'm on the Wikipedia page.
So it started in the 70s, didn't it?
It was 78 to 2013.
Yeah. He was in it, still in it. Jesus.
Yeah, because they brought it back, didn't they? They brought it back.
That's crazy.
So I can't remember when the original series ended. I think that was...
And Hagman was still in it?
Yeah, I think it was... well, what happened to Hagman at the end was I think it was quite sad. He was left...
He had a liver transplant, hadn't he? He was an absolute raving bloody boozer, wasn't he?
He loved
his booze. So I really respect him for that. It was fantastic. I think he used to... Did he not drink, like... at least two bottles of champagne a day, plus other drinks on the side, of course, for himself.
Because he was Larry Hagman.
Hagman. Oh, right. So probably when he had that glass of scotch when he was talking to Barnes, you're a loser, Barnes. Put some clothes on, Sue Ellen. He probably had real scotch, you know what I mean?
I think the last episode ended on a cliffhanger, which was JR's broken, he's left with nothing, he's lost Southwark, he's lost Ewan Oil.
Yeah.
And you see him with a gun.
Right, wow.
And Bobby heard a gunshot from his room and he went in and just said, oh no. But you never actually saw what happened.
Right,
so you didn't know. And that's how it finished the series, which was pretty annoying. But he did actually return in a couple of TV movies that were in the 90s. And I don't even know if they made reference to the gunshot. And he came back in the reboot, which followed the rivalry between JR and Bobby's sons. I don't think lasted very long. But
no, I don't
but
think
he died. He died not long after that began.
I was going to say he died soon after that, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because he was quite a poorly man. And I think it's lived on a good many years, though, after he had the liver transplant. And his health was, you know... shocking, wasn't it? He had all sorts of problems and heart attacks and all sorts, I think.
Yeah.
So he did quite well, really.
Like the Eddie Larger of American TV.
Yes, definitely.
Right, Dave, so, I can't wait for your final choice.
Okay, I'm hoping you'll think it's a good one. Now, just before I mention this character, I'm going to throw in my final wild card shout, because we have talked about TV bastards in the context of dramatizations and comedy shows, not talking about real people who presented themselves as real people on television in TV shows. And in many respects, the greatest British TV bastard of all time has surely got to be Sir James Savile. OBE, QED, the one, the only Jimmy Savile. Now then, you say, I am the ultimate bastard, you say. But
I'm proud of it.
I'm very, very proud. I fixed it for myself to be the ultimate bastard, you say. But I was thinking that, now then, jury, that really that wasn't fair because everything else is related to either a characterization or a fictional character, you say. So I'm not going to have Savile. So my number one is Dirty Den Watts.
Oh, Dave, I'm disappointed, I have to say.
Now, but there's a reason for that, Lee. There's a reason for that. Because if I can't have Savile, right?
Oh, I know where you're going now.
We're looking at a guy who played an absolute bastard who was in real life an absolute bastard. He was, you know, he was a murderer. He murdered somebody, right? And then in latter years, after he had all this success, he was an online wanker. He was wanking at people.
You've convinced me around there.
So yeah. What could be better as like, you know, you've got the ultimate TV bastard in Leslie Grantham. You know, not only did he play a bastard on TV, but in real life he was a bastard.
Yeah. Murdered a taxi driver, didn't he?
He murdered a taxi driver when he was a kid, didn't he? Just said, just take me to such and such a place. Can I have this amount of money, please? No, you can eat lead. You know, yeah, what?
I remember there was a
bastard.
There was a good letter in Viz that said, you treat your dad like a taxi driver, I said to my son. I had to laugh as he shot him in the back of the head. Mrs. Grantham.
The Viz were merciless about Leslie Grantham, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They were brilliant. I loved all those Viz jokes about Leslie. We spoke to Leslie Grantham, murderer.
Terrible Steve often has Leslie Grantham in one of his pictures when he's that horrible picture where he's sucking his finger from the online wanking video. Have you seen that?
That's disgusting.
He just pops up. It's like, oh, God, don't remind us of that.
I mean, what a legacy. What a legacy Leslie left.
I remember we were on the Isle of Skye when that news story broke, Dave.
It was incredible.
Because we stopped at this shop or something.
We were all like, what?
I think you got the paper. That picture of him sucking his finger. God.
Do you like what you see, my love? Dirty old bastard. Oh, God.
Oh, no, but I hate EastEnders with a passion, so that's why I was originally disappointed in that choice, Dave.
He's my last one to mention, and I did it because I thought we'd have a laugh.
Definitely fits the bill as a bastard.
He fits the criteria. He was.
This is it. It's like difficult.
He played the bastard very well. He was a very good bastard on TV, have to say. He was a horrible shit of a character.
Yeah.
But it just transpired that it seemed that he was like that a lot in real life, too. You know, fabulous.
Yeah. Well, it's difficult sometimes because I was thinking of a lot of characters that I wanted to put in, but then you sort of got this debate about, well, are they a bastard or are they actually a cunt? You know, one example of this would be Chris Finch from The Office.
Finchy.
Who Finchy. I decided was more of a cunt than a bastard.
Oh, I tell you what, though, that would have been a good shout, I think. Yeah.
A brilliant character.
Brilliant character. Horrible shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, Dave, so before we wrap up, have you got any more honourable mentions?
Well, I probably could have, you know, but I don't know. I think we've got some good ones there, haven't we?
Yeah.
You know, a part of me, I really wanted to include Savile because he's kind of, but then it's opening the floodgates, isn't it? You know, and obviously there's like kind of shock jock TV presenters and, you know, Piers Morgan, for example. You could say he's a right TV bastard. You know?
I don't mind Piers Morgan.
Well, no, that we would probably disagree on that, but you know what I mean. People in America, these shock jock, Rivaldo Rivera people, they're wankers, aren't they? You know.
Did you ever see, you know, Dr. Phil?
Yeah, exactly.
He's an absolute dick, Dr.
Exactly.
Phil.
So right. That's exactly.
Did you ever see that episode where he was trying to humiliate this guy who'd come up with the concept of bum fights, getting two tramps, two vagrants to have a fight?
Oh, I've heard of this. Money. Yeah. Nasty.
So Dr. Phil wanted to get this guy on his show and humiliate him.
Yeah.
Basically run him down. And amazingly, the guy agreed to come on there. Yeah. But what he did was a stroke of genius. He actually made himself look like Dr. Phil.
He came
so he like shaved his head, just left the bits at the side, stuck on a moustache, put on a Dr. Phil suit. But you just want to see Dr. Phil's face when he walks out.
I've got to see that.
You can see it on YouTube.
Right.
But listen, you know what he does?
Listeners, watch this. Watch what Lee's talking about here. Watch the Dr. Phil, just who has Dr. a guest Phil on that dresses fights. Up like Dr. Phil. And can I also mention, very quickly, please go and have a look at the fight scene in the film Darker Than Amber.
Yeah, I've got it loaded already, Dave, so I'm going to look at that in a bit.
It's fabulous with the legendary William Smith and the equally legendary Rod Taylor. Sorry,
Lee. Right, so let's just have a recap, Dave. So my five were Terry Duckworth, Francis Urquhart, The Freak, that's Joan Ferguson from Prisoner, Todd Alquist from Breaking Bad, and JR.
And my five were, in no particular order, Anthony Falconetti from Rich Man, Poor Man, Dirty Den from EastEnders, Yozza Hughes from Boys from the Black Stuff, Papa Lazarou from The League of Gentlemen, and John Wayne Gacy from To Catch a Killer, who is the only biographical character, I think, out of all our choices.
Listeners, please feel free to send us your bastards via Facebook, Twitter, and all the usual platforms.
Can we just say very quickly, Lee, before we go, like we did in the like we did with the film Bastards, can we have one ultimate bastard that we agree on? I know that I'm quite ready to concede one of yours as the ultimate TV bastard. So I'm going to say I'm very happy if you agree with me to say that J.R. Ewing is the ultimate TV bastard.
Yeah, I would. He would be my number one, definitely. So thanks for agreeing. But I'd say out of yours,
well said,
I'd say the one I liked the best, which was a bit left field, was Papa Lazarou.
Thank you, sir. Lovely.
See you next time.
See you next time.
I don't care if you want to be with two chimpanzees and a goat.
Well, I thought you'd still be here, Barnes. Never too far from the free food and drink, huh? No one of you cares so much for Sue Ellen. She's just like your mother. Another drunken slut who ran away.
Well, what's a family for if it can't take care of its losers?
Even though she's sleeping with another man? Well, you have a very perverse way of looking at what's right and wrong, honey. Well, I suppose that's to be expected from the illegitimate child of a ranch foreman and a stepdaughter of the town drunk.
Yeah, that's all this family needs. Another half-breed.
I don't want my little boy to pick up a newspaper in the future and find out what a tramp his mother is.
Lucy, why don't you have that junior plastic surgeon you're married to design your new face? One without a mouth.
What the hell did I say?
JR, you are the daddy.